Okay, so thank you for the invitation to this workshop. It's really great to be here. And in this talk, I'd like to tell you some recent attempts in constructing realistic flux back here. And this is work done in collaboration with Fernando Matrisano, who is also here at this meeting. So among the many problems facing string phenomenology, fixing the moduli and breaking supersymmetry are perhaps the two most pressing ones. Although there exists string back here with the gross features of the standard model, for example, the example that Volker will present to you later at this workshop, this string back here generically contains a lot of moduli, which are scalar field describing the coupling constant as well as the size and shape of the extra dimensions. So this moduli better be fixed, otherwise they will give us serious phenomenological problems, not to mention that predictability will be lost. Now, in string phenomenology, this moduli problem is usually swept under the rug. Traditionally, to make contact with particle physics, we start with compactifications that give us four-dimensional models with n equals to one supersymmetry, and certain realistic features, for instance, a low energy gauge group that looks like MSSM or supersymmetric grand unified theories. The hope is that the same non-perturbative effects that could break supersymmetry and give masses to the superponders of the standard model could also lift all these moduli. However, the problem is that the potential which lift this moduli as well as the supersymmetry breaking effects on the standard model sectors are not that easily computable. So in practice, what we oftentimes do is to just simply parameterize our ignorance of supersymmetry breaking and parameterize our ignorance of the supersymmetric breaking sector with the vacuum expectation value of some auxiliary fields without specifying how this auxiliary field would pair up events. Now, over the past few years, there have been some interesting attempts to understand these two central problems in string phenomenology by considering compactification with fluxes. So in type 2B string theory, which is the framework in which I will be focusing on in this talk, there is a superpotential generated by the free-form NSNS and the Ramon-Ramon background flux. And because the superpotential depends on the dilaton and the complex structure moduli, generically, this moduli will be lifted. Now, interestingly, depending on how the gauge and chiral sectors of the theories are embedded, this background flux could also induce soft supersymmetry breaking effects, leading to computable soft supersymmetry breaking terms. Now, as a bonus, this background flux also naturally gives rise to a non-trivial wall factor, which is useful in generating a hierarchy of scales. And with some extra engineering, it seems possible to construct de Sitter vacuum and inflationary model in this context. So this is a rather interesting scenario because several interesting phenomenological appealing features are all realized in one single framework. But the question is, where is the standard model? Well, so far, the studies of flux compactifications have mainly been focused on models where the open string sector is relatively simple. And so no chiral, no explicit construction of chiral models of flux compactification have been found. And in fact, some previous attempts seems to suggest that it's rather difficult to construct such examples. Now, the purpose of this talk is to present some of the first few examples of this back here. And as we will see, we find examples of chiral flux back here by means of magnetized D-brains. And I'll explain to you what this magnetized D-brains mean later on in the talk. In particular, we consider models with both n equals to 1 and n equals to 2, n equals to 0 supersymmetry. Now, the interesting features of this model is that even though supersymmetry is broken, there are no tadpole instabilities that are generated, at least to lowest order. So the supergravity equation of motions are still satisfied. Now, not only these models are chiral, but the low energy spectrum of these models are quite close to the MSSM. And moreover, they are the soft supersymmetry breaking terms are in principle computable. So these are really some interesting toy models for exploring the phenomenological features of flux compactification. An interesting lesson that we learned from this example is that one can introduce additional pairs of D9 and anti-D9 brains, which carry some negative D3 charge. Normally, systems involving D9 anti-D9 brains break supersymmetry, but this is not the case here because of some non-trivial background magnetic flux that you turn on the well bottom of the D-brains. And again, we'll see that in more details later on. Now, I couldn't help but notice that there are a lot of talks in this workshop about the landscape. So let me also say a few words about it. Well, an implicit assumption in this approach is that somewhere in the landscape of flux vacuum, you do find examples of string vacuum with features of the standard model. So it would be nice to find some explicit examples to support this assumption. And as you see, some of the details of our construction, such as the presence of this additional D9 anti-D9 pairs, also have some interesting implications to the counting of flux vacuum. And I'm sure that Ralph will tell you more about that in his talk. Okay, so now let's turn to the construction of these models. So the framework that we will be discussing is type 2B flux complexifications. And so they are naturally D-brains, which give us UN gauge theories at low energies. But that's not enough to obtain a realistic model, because in order for the model to be realistic, we need these gauge theories to be chiral. So far, we know that there are two ways in which chiral fermions can arise from D-brains in type 2B complexifications. We can obtain chirality by locating D-brains at singular points, for instance, at some orbifold or conifold singularities. Alternatively, chiral fermions can appear when the D-brains are magnetized. In other words, there are some non-trivial gauge bundle on the well volume of the D-brains. So chiral fermions come about because you can have open strings ending on different stacks of D-brains with different gauge bundles. Now, these two different approaches in obtaining chiral fermions have some similarities because both involve B-type D-brains, but they differ in some details. Models with D3 brains of singularities are oftentimes used to construct local models because without much difficulty, you can engineer a singularity that gives you features of the standard model. And it is not too difficult to embed these local constructions in more involved complexifications, for instance, those that involve warp throats. And it's also rather easy to understand why soft terms are generated by the background freeform flux. Again, we'll see that in more details later. But to some extent, these models are way too simple because the entire standard model sector are localized only on a single stack of D-brains, so there would be no flux-induced supersymmetry breaking terms on the well of the three brains unless you introduce tuples. As it turns out, the other approach in obtaining chiral fermions with magnetized D-brains gives you a richer and more interesting soft supersymmetry breaking pattern, in the sense that supersymmetry can be broken while the supergravity equations are still satisfied. Now, so this is the approach that we will be focusing on in this talk. So our strategy to construct this kind of chiral examples of flux complexifications is to first identify a building block of D-brains that give us the low energy spectrum of the MSSM. We then try to embed this local building blocks of D-brains into a global models by introducing some additional sources, such as freeform flux and some hidden sector brains. As it turns out, in order to put all these things together into a global model, we need to introduce these additional pairs of D9 anti-D9 brains, which carries negative D3 charge. But they are nonetheless BPS because of the non-trivial magnetic flux on the well volume. But there's a warning here. Even though these additional pairs of D9 and anti-D9 brains do not carry any net D9 brain charge, they could carry some rather subtle discrete K-theory charge, and this could put some additional constraints on the consistency of the models. So this is more or less a cartoon of what we'll do. For simplicity, we'll consider flux vacuum that can be realized as some Calabi-Yau orientables. So you can think of them as some special cases of F-theory complexifications. So in addition to the background Calabi-Yau, there are some orientable planes, orientable 7 planes, and orientable 3 planes. Now the standard model comes from the D7 brain sectors. And in order to obtain chirality, we need to magnetize the D-brain tunnel on some non-trivial gauge bundle on the seven brains. Now, modular stabilization and supersymmetry breaking can be achieved if you turn on some background free-form flux. Now, all these elements over here are known. The challenge is to actually put all these things together into a consistent global model. Okay, so we'll start with a particularly simple example of a collabial, which is a toroidal orbifold, a toroidal C2 cross C2 orbifold. The two C2 generators act on the compact dimensions in the following way. Actually, there are two different choices of this orbifold, depending on the discrete torsion that you turn on between these two C2 generators. But for the purpose of this talk, we'll just focus on the first one with discrete torsion, which has fewer Kähler moduli, although in our paper we consider both cases as well. So this is the background that we will be discussing. Now, since this is an oriented fold, we need to further quotient the background by some well-shaped parity symmetry. And the oriented fold projection introduces some oriented fold planes. So this includes the oriented fold three planes, which are points in the collabial, as well as three different types of oriented fold seven planes wrapping around different four cycles. Now, the oriented fold planes are objects which carry Ramon-Ramon charge, and so we need to find objects with the opposite Ramon-Ramon charge to cancel them in a global model. And the simplest way to cancel the orientable plane charge is to introduce some D3 brains and D7 brains that are parallel to the orientable planes. But if you do that, we find that the resulting model is non-chiral. But it's not impossible to introduce chirality if you consider now turning on some background gauge bundles on the seven brain well volume. And it's perhaps a little hard to see from this picture. So you can go to the T-dual picture where this magnetized D-brains becomes D-brains that are intersecting at angles. And the chiral fermions come about because open strings that are stretched between different stacks of D-brains are localized at the point where they intersect. So we can consider the following stack of D7 brains, three different types. And the gauge group on the well volume of the seven brains is a symplectic group and not unitary because they are sitting right on top of the orientable planes. Now, if you turn on a magnetic flux on the world volume of, say, one of the stacks of D7 brains, the gauge group now becomes unitary because the orientable projection now do not identify the D brains to itself. They are not invariant. And also, the resulting theory is now chiral. The number of chiral generations is determined by the units of magnetic flux that you turn on the well volume of the D-brains. So if you turn on three units of magnetic flux on the well volume of the D-brains, you get three generations of chiral matter transforming in the bifundamental representation. Now, using the fact that SP2 is the same as SU2, this magnetized D-brain setup gives you a very simple way to realize the Patisserelle model. So the Patisserelle model is a rather old idea to embed the standard model, putting together the quarks and leptons into some bigger representation. And the Patisserelle gauge group can be easily broken down to the MSSM by further hexing. So I won't bore you with the details of how this hexing can be done, but just to mention that this hexing process can be understood as the splitting and also recombination of B-brains. Now, the end result of this hexing is that we get now the minimal matter and hex content of the MSSM. So this is just the minimal supersymmetric standard model with three generations of chiral matter and one pair of hex doublets. So all of this about the construction of this local MSSM model is easier to realize in the T-dual picture, of course, where the magnetized D-brains becomes D-brains that are intersecting. So D-brains, the D-brains that were originally parallel to one another, When you turn on the background magnetic flux, this corresponds to rotating the D-brains at an angle. So originally, D-brains that were paralleled can now intersect, and the intersection points are precisely where the chiral fermions live. Now, the process of Hexing can also be understood rather simply by splitting of the D-brains. So now that we have the block of D-brains that give us the MSSM, we can look at more general type of D-brains that we can introduce into the vacuum. And in fact, the intersecting D-brain setup gives you a very simple way to describe the magnetized D-brain models by describing them in terms of several topological quantities. So these topological quantities include the number of D-brains in each stack, the unit of magnetic flux that you turn on each of the T2, as well as the number of times the D-brains wrap around the T2. So for instance, 7 brains is essentially identical to 9 brains, because you can turn on a unit of magnetic flux on one of the T2, and because of the transiron coupling, this would give you an induced 7 brain charge. So the oriented flow projection pairs together D brains with different magnetic number, and so in particular, this implies that in the oriented flow model, there are no net D9 and D5 brain charge, because the D9 and the D5 brains always come along with their oriented flow image. But there could be some net D7 and D3 brain charge. And in this particular notation of magnetized D brains, the MSSM model that we introduced earlier has the following magnetic numbers. And to compute the chiral spectrum of this model, we can calculate the intersection product in much the same way as in the intersecting brain model. And that, I think Ralph will tell you more about that in his talk. So far we haven't introduced any background flux, so let's now introduce the free-form flux into the background. The free-form Ramon-Ramon flux and the NSNS flux in type 2B theory must satisfy the Biangay identity, and they should be properly quantized over any 3 cycles in the compact space. Now, these quantization conditions are particularly simple. Particularly simple for toroidal orbifolds, because it contains 3 cycles whose volume is only a fraction of those in the covering space. So in the case of C2 cross C2, the volume of the about 3 cycles is simply 1/4 of those in the torus. Now that we have an oriented flow projection, and this introduced some extra factors of 2, unless the three cycle that we quantize the flux crosses an odd number of exotic oriented flow planes. But in the particular construction that we're considering, there are no such exotic oriented flow planes with a funny sign of the tension and the Ramon-Ramon charge. So this background free-form flux are simply quantized in multiple of 8 in the coupling space. So now the three-form flux the free-form flux carried Ramon-Ramon charge and tension. You can see that easily by looking at the supergravity action. Turns out that the D3 brain charge carried by the Ramon-Ramon flux, carried by the free-form flux, is a topological quantity. The tension carried by the flux, on the other hand, is not topological, but depends on the complex structure moduli and the dilaton. And in fact, one can think about the difference between this tension carried by the flux and the Ramon-Ramon charge as some effective potential for this moduli. The minimum of this potential is reached when the BPS-like bound is saturated, namely when the flux is either self-dual, imaginary self-dual, or imaginary anti-self-dual. So even though both the ISD flux and the IASD flux saturates the BPS-like bound, because we have oriented for three planes in the vacuum, and this pick out a particular type of flux, which is IST, because they preserve the same type of supersymmetry. Now, the IST condition on the flux density that I have written down over here is really a condition of the moduli, because the flux, the background fluxes are quantized. The flux density depends on the dilaton as well as the volume of the three cycles that you quantize the flux over. And so as we change the volume of the three cycles, the flux density changes, so the IST condition is no longer satisfied. So in general, by turning on some, this minimization of the potential would fix the dilaton and the complex structure moduli. So starting from a flux density that satisfies the IST condition, as you change the volume of the three cycle, the IST condition is no longer true. Okay, so now although both IST, both, although the IST flux saturate the BPS bound, not all components of the ISD flux preserve supersymmetry. Only the 2, 2, 1 component of the flux does. The other component, the 0, 3 flux, breaks supersymmetry because you can see that by looking at the gravitational mass, the gravitational would pick up a mass from the 3-form flux. And you can also see later on that there would be by turning on these fluxes, there would be soft supersymmetry breaking terms induced on the 7th brain wall volume. However, because of the node scale structure, the vacuum energy still remains zero after supersymmetry is broken. So this is the type of background flux that we would consider, flux that are constant over the Calabi-Yau. So now it seems rather straightforward to construct examples of chiral flux vacua, because all we have to do is to trace some of the D3 brains with some ISD flux because they carry the same type of tension and Ramon-Ramon charge. So what's the problem? The problem is that in a compact, in a global model, the total Ramon-Ramon charge carried by the D brains, the 3-form flux, as well as the all three planes must add up to zero, just the Gauss law constraint. And in the simple example that we are considering, the Ramon-Ramon charge carried by the background flux is much bigger than that of the oriental planes all add together. So in order to cancel the tadpoles and construct a consistent global model, we need to introduce objects that carry negative D3 brain charge. Now, obviously, if we introduce anti-D3 brains, that would do the job. But anti-D3 brains break supersymmetry in a rather uncontrolled way and would generate a large NSNS tadpole, which would make the model unstable. And this is clearly not what we want for the standard model. And in fact, this was the problem encountered earlier in this attempt, earlier attempts in constructing examples of chiral flux vacuum. It turns out there's a rather interesting way to overcome this problem. Instead of introducing some additional anti-D3 brains, you can add pairs of D9 and anti-D9 brains. Usually, system involving D9 anti-D9 brains are non-BPS and they break supersymmetry, but it turns out with some suitable choices of gauge bundle, this D9 anti-D9 system could preserve n equals to 1 supersymmetry, and you could carry precisely the negative D3 brain charge that we need. So how do we see that? Well, it's easier to go to the T-dual picture where a magnetized D brain becomes a D brain that is intersecting at a non-trivial angle with the oriental planes. So the D brain would preserve supersymmetry if the angle between it and the oriental plane satisfies this condition. The sum of the angle is equal to 0 mod 2 pi. And the anti-D9 brain simply corresponds to the oriental image of the original D brain, which preserves the same supersymmetry. Now you can see from this particular picture that the system as a whole carry Ramon-Ramon charge of the same sign as some of the oriental floor planes, although not all of them. And so this is precisely the reason why they could contribute to the negative D3 charge that we need. But we have to be careful, because even though the D9 anti-D9 pairs do not carry any net D9 brain charge, they could carry some discrete K3 charge, which are invisible in homology. Now, just like other Ramon-Ramon charge, this discrete K3 charge must be canceled globally in order to construct a consistent model. And so this D9 anti-D9 brain pairs must come in a multiple of 2. Now, the discrete K3 charge are rather subtle, because you cannot compute them by the usual procedure of factorizing the one-loop open string amplitude. And you cannot see them either from analyzing the chiral anomalies in the low-energy spectrum. But these kind of constraints are there, and you can detect the presence of this K3 charge by introducing a deep brain probe, because the uncancelled K3 charge in the vacuum could show up as some global SU2 weighted anomalies on the well volume theory. So from the field theory point of view, this discrete K3 constraint translates to the requirement that the number of fundamental representation of any symplectic group must be even, whether the symplectic group comes from some probe deep brains or some symplectic group that already appears in the low energy spectrum. So from both the K-theory and the field theory point of view, these are C2 constraints. Yeah. Actually, general SP. Right. So you will see that I will write down the constraints that in a moment. And these constraints are derived by introducing some probe that gives you SP2. But you can introduce more of these deep brains, and the constraints turn out to be the same. Yes, they do. So you will see that these are the hidden sector gauge group later on in the model. And the question is whether they would introduce some dangerous additional matter. And so in the model that I'm going to present to you, there will be some additional matter beyond the standard model. And so these are the unappealing features of the model. So you could, if there's some way to get rid of this matter, that would be great. Okay, so this is something that we should keep in mind. There are some additional constraints that we may overlook. So just a brief recap what we have done. We consider some background of type 2B flux convexification. And the BPS object that we introduce include the oriental full planes, the oriental full 7 planes, oriental full 3 planes. Some magnetized D7 brains that give us the standard model, and some additional magnetized D9 anti-D9 pairs, which give us the negative D3 charge that we need, as well as some constant ISD flux. Now, when we put all these things together into a global model, we need to make sure that the total Ramon charge carried by these objects must add up to 0. So these are the Gauss's law constraints. And some of this Ramon-Ramon charge are homological, in the sense that there are some supergravity Ramon-Ramon fields to which they couple to. And there are some additional charge that are harder to detect. These are the discrete K3 charge. But you can obtain these extra constraints by introducing some D-brain probe, in particular D-brains parallel to the oriented full plane. And this gives you some symplectic asymmetry. Okay, so now we can collect all the ingredients that we have been discussing, the fluxes, the D brains, the oriental full planes, the background itself, and construct the MSSM. And an example which satisfies all these constraints that I listed before is given by this set of D brains. And in particular, the part of the set of the D-brains that are labeled in blue corresponds to the MSSM module that we introduced earlier, the set of D-brains that give you precisely the spectrum of the MSSM. And as John asked a moment ago, C2 since we introduced some additional D9 anti-D9 brain, we expect there will be some additional matter coming from this D-brain. Now, the D9 anti-D9 brains that we introduce are the H1 and H2 brains over here. And in order for them not to break supersymmetry, the Kähler moduli must set aside its following conditions. So A1, A2, A3 corresponds to the area of each of these two-dimensional torus, and there's some constraints on this area in order for the set of D-brains that we introduce here not to break supersymmetry. And actually, this set of constraints can be understood as the requirement of a vanishing Fi D-term. So you expect that a linear combination of the Kähler moduli and the open string moduli to be stabilized. Okay. So now, in the model that we present over here, the Raman-Raman tadpoles would cancel if the number of generations, G, the rank of the hidden sector, and the three-form flux satisfy these constraints. So let's look at some simple example. Well, if we consider only turning on some supersymmetric preserving ISD flux, we find an example of an n equals to 1 chiral example of flux compactification, which is the first example of this kind in the literature. Now, if on the other hand, it's the 0-3 flux, which is non-vanishing, the flux which breaks supersymmetry softly, we have a three-generation MSSM-like model with supersymmetry that is softly broken by the background flux. If we turn off all the background flux, it's easier to look for examples. And in fact, this is an n equals to 1 embedding of the MSSM model that we introduced earlier, which is an interesting example by itself. So for the rest of the talk, I will be mainly focusing on this example because this is also a good toy model for studying supersymmetry breaking by background flux. Now, there are some interesting phenomenological features of this model. I would not tell you anything about that here because you would be hearing about them in Fernando's talk next week in the string phenomenology workshop. Instead, let me say a few words about the effect of fluxes on the open string sector. Now, in this class of models that we have been discussing, there are in general some non-chiral matter beyond the minimal matter content of the MSSM, and they are the open string moduli corresponding to the position as well as the Wilson lines of the seven brains. In the presence of a background freeform flux, the geometrical seven-brain moduli are generically lifted by the flux. And for precisely the same reason, the three-form flux also could induce soft supersymmetry breaking terms on the D7 brains, which is where the standard model lives. So how do we see that the background flux could induce soft supersymmetry breaking terms? Well, we can see it from considering a simple case of a D3 brain in a flux background. Now, recall that the action for the world volume fields describe the dynamics of the D-brains. So whether soft terms are generated or not depends on whether it costs energy to move the D-brains in this background. Now, the ISD flux that we turn on has positive tension and positive Raman-Raman charge. So for a D3 brain in this background, the gravitational attraction between the D brains and the ISD flux cancels precisely the Raman-Raman repulsion between the flux and the D3 brains. So there would not be any soft terms induced by the background three-form flux. Now, on the other hand, an ISD flux carry positive tension and negative D3 brain charge. And so the gravitational force and the Raman-Raman force for D3 brain in this background actually adds up. So for D3 brain in an IASD flux background, it would be attracted to the region of the flux region. It would be attracted to a region where the ISD flux density is maximum, and so this is the reason why soft terms will be induced by turning on this ISD flux. So it costs energy to move it away from the point where the ISD flux is maximum. Now, the local analysis for D7 brains is more involved, but since the standard model comes from the D7 brains in our case, so let me also say something about that. So it is more involved because the D7 brains now wrap around the four cycles of the compact space. And so the local geometry is no longer R6, as we implicitly assume in this picture over here. But the local geometry is a four cycle times R2. And we can split the three-form flux into representation of the local symmetry. So for the example that we have been discussing, the three-form flux that we turn on is locally a two-form which lies within the seven brains and a one-form in R2. Yes. So again, this is a picture that intuitively tell you why this is the case, and a detailed calculation like the one that you perform, as well as others in the audience, confirm that when you turn on this different type of fluxes, there will be explicit formula for the soft terms and the Gaussian masses as well. Yeah. Right. So it would be nice if I can just draw the picture and get the answer right away. But sometimes picture helps. Right? So you can. Okay. So now let's go back to the seven brain case. So as we discussed earlier, this case is much more complicated because we need to take into account how the three-form flux, what kind of three-form flux that we turn on. And in the case that we are considering, the three-form flux is locally a two-form that lies within the seven brains and a one-form that lies outside the seven brains. And this is good because if the three-form flux that lies entirely within the seven brains, tadpoles will be generated for the dual 5-form on the world one of the seven brains, leading to some potential free-written anomalies. Right. So in any case, in the example that we are considering, that's not the case. So we turn on some three-form flux that is locally of the form of a two-form on the seven brains and some one form outside the seven brains. Now, depending on whether the two form is self-dual or anti-self-dual, there will be induced D3 charge or anti-D3 charge on the seven brains. So now it's clear from this picture why soft terms could be generated, because whether soft terms are generated or not depends on whether there are non-trivial interactions between the induced D3 charge and the background flux. So for the case where the induced D3 charge is positive, there are no non-trivial interactions with the background flux itself, so there will be no soft terms that are generated. On the other hand, if the induced D3 charge is negative, there would be a non-trivial non-trivial interactions with the background ISD flux, and this is precisely the reason why soft terms will be induced. So now we see why soft terms are generated by the background flux, but in the simple model that I have just described, not all the moduli are stabilized by the background flux. In particular, some non-geometrical moduli, such as the D7 brain Wilson lines, are not fixed. And moreover, for those moduli that are stabilized by the background flux, you expect that the masses of this moduli will be typically of the same order as the soft terms because they have the similar origin. And so even though we stabilize those moduli, the masses are too light, and the existence of these light fields could easily spoil some of the properties that you would like to see in a phenomenologically viable model, for instance, properties such as asymptotic freedom. Now, a solution to this problem is to consider D brains that wrap around some rigid deep brain wrapping around some rigid cycles. And I understand that Ralph would talk about that in his talk, so I won't go into the details, but I should say that there was a very interesting paper that that appeared last week, in which an n equals to 1 F3 compactification was presented, where all the closed and open string moduli are stabilized by a combination of background fluxes and non-perturbative effects. And indeed, the model is so simple that there are no meta fields that are charged under the gauge group at all. So it will be interesting to see if one can combine these ideas to construct more realistic examples where all moduli are stabilized. So I must be speaking very fast because I still have plenty of time. So let me just summarize. I hope that these examples give you a proof of concept that models with realistic features, such as the MSSM, can arise in flux compactification. And there have been a lot of interesting work on studying the landscape, and you will learn more about that in Frederick's talk later this afternoon. And a natural next step in this approach is to start imposing cuts on the landscape of vacua, for instance, by requiring some realistic features, such as chirality. And it would be interesting to see if any of the statements about the landscape could change once you take into account this additional data on the deep brain sector. And these models are good toy model for studying and exploring the phenomenological features of flux compactifications because supersymmetry is broken in a rather controlled way. Although I have only described to you an example which involved toroidal orbifold, the setup that I introduced can easily be generalized to more involved background. For instance, some more generalized Calabi-Yau cases where warp flows can be realized. And a key observation that allow us to construct this example is to introduce additional pairs of these D9 anti D9 brains, which hasn't been much discussed in the general discussion of flux compactification. And it would be interesting to study the properties of these guys in more general flux vacua. And in particular, this D9 anti system can carry some discrete K-theory charge, and we are currently working on deriving this K-theory charges directly from the worksheet point of view, which can be compared with the probe D-brain argument that I gave you earlier. And this D9 anti-D9 system also allow us to construct some new n equals to 1 vacua in oriented flows that were thought to emit only non-supersymmetric solutions, and you will hear a talk about that in the string phenomenology conference next week. And finally, because these constructions are very simple, it would be interesting to construct a lift to F-theory, as well as to explore some issues about generalized geometries that are involved in the heterotic and type 2A dual of these models. And you will hear many talks about generalized geometry in this workshop, so I will just stop here. Thank you.